Good evening, everyone. So good to see everyone back out today. It's been a beautiful day. We've got a good number with us this evening. This evening, I want us for a few minutes to consider Genesis chapter 14 and Abraham, the man of faith. There are a lot of lessons that we can get from this chapter. Sometimes I think it's just good to go through a chapter at a time and look and see what we can draw out of that. So Genesis covers more time than any other book in the Bible. Genesis serves as background for the 65 other books that make up the Bible. That's one reason why it's so important to understand it. Chapters 12 through 50 show the lives of four different individuals. 12 through 24, Abraham; 25 through 27, Isaac; 28 through 36, Jacob, the son of Israel; and 37 through 50, Joseph. Now, the Genesis account of Abraham records the development of his faith. And we talk about Abraham being a man of great faith. But like anybody that was a man of great faith, they didn't always start out that way. Chapters 12 and 13, we see that he had an imperfect faith. Chapters 14 through 17, we see that he had a growing faith. Chapters 18 through 25, he had a mature faith. We see the faithfulness of Abraham in many ways and places. One of the first places is when God called Abraham, and he went out not knowing whither he went. So remember and consider this. Abraham's family worshipped idols, and God called him. He called him to come out from where he was. Abraham left, going to a place that he did not know where he was going. Lot went with him. Lot followed Abraham. Abraham followed God. Soon we find Lot dwelling in Sodom. And then we see him as a captive. And when we think about Lot for a minute, we see a lesson that worldliness is sure to lead to spiritual bondage. I've got a couple maps here to help us see part of this journey from Ur to Haran in Genesis chapter 11. Then from Haran to Shechem, we see he travels down here. And then from up to Bethel, down to Ai, to Hebron, up to Dan, and then north on up to Damascus in chapter 14, 15. It's also interesting to note on this map, down at the bottom of the Dead Sea, those three dots, Sodom and Gomorrah, with the question mark. This is where the archaeologists believe that Sodom and Gomorrah was. We know it was destroyed, and we'll see how this chapter 14 sheds a little light into one of the possibilities with that. So chapter 14 relates the account of a military operation in which Abraham and his allies rescued Lot following his capture by a raiding party composed of an alliance of kings. This account also records Abraham's encounter with Melchizedek, which also reveals a type of Jesus Christ. So there's a lot going on in this chapter. Let's start looking in chapter 14, down at verse 8. I am not going to read everything completely, and you'll see why once we start reading here. But in verse 8, we see the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah. So they are mentioned in verse 8. Then it mentions these other kings and where they are king of. They went out and joined together in battle in the valley of Siddim. So we have these five kings mentioned in verse 8. We look at verse 9, and they are going to battle against the king of Elam, the king of nations, the king of Shinar, and king of Eleazar. So we have four kings. So we have this battle taking place of five kings and four kings. Now the valley of Siddim was full of asphalt pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. Some fell there, and the remainder fled to the mountains. This map shows part of the location and talks about the kings going out to battle. The invading kings from Shinar and Elam, there were five cities that were attacked. They were near each other in the plain of Jordan. And then it mentions those five cities, Sodom, Gomorrah, Adamah, Zebulun, and Zoar. Why did they go to war? Well, the reason for the war was the revolt of five kings of the plain of Jordan against being governed by the king of Elam. For 12 years, they served under his foreign power. Finally, they had enough. They said, "We aren't paying taxes anymore." They attempted to shake off the yoke of oppression, and Chedorlaomer, in conjunction with his allies, declared war. So they were being oppressed. They had enough. They declared war. So the other king and his allies laid neighboring countries waste. They enriched themselves with the spoil. They defeated the five cities of the plain. Sodom, the city where Lot lived, was one of them. So Lot was carried captive. So Abraham's nephew, sometimes the way it's recorded in the Old Testament, it'll refer to him as his brother, was his brother's son, but his nephew Lot was carried captive. And in this chapter, we have an account of the only military action we ever find Abram engaged in. But Abram was prepared to defend himself. He had 318 armed, trained servants. So in verse 11, they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah, their provisions, and went their way. They also took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods and departed. Then one who had escaped came and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abram. Now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobath, which is north of Damascus. Now Abraham, at this point, he was a very rich man. Very rich man. And we'll look a little bit more, but we see he had 318 trained servants who were born in his own house. We'll look at that here in a couple slides. So he divided his forces against them by night. He and his servants attacked them, pursued them as far as Hobath, which is north of Damascus. So they did a lot of traveling in this attack also. A trained men born in his house. Again, it's often overlooked that Abraham had a lot of servants. And when it talks about slaves born in his house, that means that he had them for a time. The families were large enough that his servants were having children that were of fighting age here. Many sons born to his concubines. So that brings up the question of concubines. You go back to Genesis, or we'll look at Genesis 25:6, not back, but Abraham gave gifts to the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had. And while he was still living, he sent them eastward away from Isaac, his son, to the country of the east. So Abraham had concubines. Doesn't say how many. We know of one by name, but he had a number of them. And again, this would not have been unusual because he had grown up in idol worship. Concubines were common in Abraham's family. His brother Nahor also having at least one concubine, possibly others. Genesis 22 gives an account of that, who was born to who. You get down to verse 23, and Bethuel begot Rebekah. These eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. His concubine, whose name was Reuah, also bore, and then it mentions the children that she bore. So they pursued in this battle north of Palestine, and this brought Abraham into the Jerusalem area on his return trip to his residence in Hebron and provided the setting for his meeting with Melchizedek. So there's a lot of things that take place in chapter 14. And this entire record was constructed in such a manner as to focus upon that event, as to how Abraham was able to overtake them and how it was done. So he heard about the war from a man that escaped, and immediately he rose to action. His courage and his conduct were remarkable. You just think about this. Someone escapes and tells Abraham, your nephew's been captured. Abraham doesn't hesitate. He makes a plan to go and get them. Abraham defeated his enemies. He rescued not only Lot, but the rest of the captives also. It doesn't talk about him sustaining any loss. The king of Sodom tried to reward Abraham, but Abraham would not take the reward. So Abraham, he was a man of great faith. And we see that first, he opposed the kings. He went out to do battle. He took his men, his servants, to do battle against these kings. When he was victorious over them in this battle, he refused the world's wealth. So we see some things about his character here. When he meets Melchizedek, verse 18, king of Salem brought forth bread and wine. He was the priest of the Most High God. He blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thine hand. And he gave him tithes of all. So it's interesting in verse 18, it talks about Melchizedek. In verse 17, it says the king of Sodom went out to meet him, but then it doesn't go into a dialogue on the king of Sodom. He switches to Melchizedek, as Moses is recording this account later. He is switching to Melchizedek and focuses on that. And then in verse 21, he goes back to talking about the king of Sodom. So we see that Melchizedek has the higher position here in this story. This is the first time Melchizedek, king of Salem, and priest of God, this is the first time the word priest is used in the Bible. And you think about this, it was still in the patriarchal age. It wasn't in the Mosaic age yet. It was in the patriarchal age, before the Mosaical age. And there are many unanswered questions about the life of Melchizedek. Hebrews chapter 7 gives us a little more of a look at that. But again, we see where he has traveled, where Sodom and Gomorrah were located, Hebron, Jerusalem, Dan. So when we look at this battle that he was in and this victory that he had, a few things to point out. Almighty God was with him and blessed his rescue effort. This man of faith, Abraham, he hears his nephew has been captured. He doesn't hesitate. And God was with him and blessed his rescue effort. Abraham was aided by three allies. So there is something about his character that when he went to rescue his nephew, there were men that wanted to help him. He had the advantage of surprise. He attacked by night. He attacked from a number of directions at one time. He attacked an overconfident force with their guard down. You think about this too. Abraham wasn't a military man, but this was common sense in what he was doing. And he attacked a force weary from a long campaign, depleted by casualties. So these men had already been involved in war when Abraham pursues them. But you look at these half a dozen things here, the way his strategy was, and this was a very good strategy. And Abraham was successful in attacking his opponent. And we need to be aware, Satan will use these tactics also. And we need to be aware of his devices. Satan will have allies to come after us. Satan will attack us by surprise. He will attack us at night whenever we least expect it. He'll attack us from a number of different directions at the same time. We're going to be overconfident, and we're going to lose the battle unless we are aware of Satan's devices. So this was a good strategy that Abraham used, and we need to be aware that Satan is going to use this against us. You think about Abraham and Lot. Abraham was a separated man. He was set apart to serve God. He dwelt in the presence of God. He went to battle as one who had come out from his holy, soul-inspiring presence. Abraham had a relationship with God. This is still early in his faith, but he had a relationship with God. The victory is complete. You compare Abraham with Lot. Lot became engaged with the ungodly. Lot could not even save himself. And it's the separated one alone, who's going to be able to save others. We have to consecrate ourselves, set our heart on serving God. Again, back to the airplane example, we have to save ourselves before we can save that person next to us. Abraham's power lay in his life of faith. If we would have victory for God, then we must be separated unto God. Remember where and how Samson failed in Judges 16. Samson was not faithful to his vow. Remember that Jesus said, I am the vine and ye are the branches. The fruitful branch must abide in the vine. So back to verse 16, he brought back all the goods, he brought back his brother Lot, his goods, as well as the woman and the people. The king of Sodom went out to meet him. So as soon as he rescues Lot, this king goes out, but the focus isn't on the king of Sodom, it switches to Melchizedek. The king of Sodom said to Abraham, give me the persons and take the goods for yourself. But Abraham said to the king of Sodom, I raise my hand to the Lord God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I will take nothing from a thread to a sandal strap, and that I will not take anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich. You think about this with the character of Abram. He goes out, he risks his life, he risked his servants' lives to rescue his nephew. The king of Sodom is thankful for this. He says, you know, take this. And he says, I don't want to take anything from you. I don't even want to take a thread or a sandal strap. I will not take anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abraham rich. You see, Abraham knew that everything he had came from God, not from some ungodly king. We switch back to Melchizedek for a minute. King of righteousness. That's one of the titles of Christ. Hebrews 7:1. This Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. It's interesting. This is like sometimes you watch a movie and the plot is going along and then somebody makes a cameo appearance. They come into the scene for a little bit, someone famous, and then they leave. That's what we have here in chapter 14 with Melchizedek. He's making a cameo appearance. Salem means peace. Therefore, King of Salem is the same as King of Peace. Another of the titles of Jesus. Hebrews 7:2, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, being translated King of Righteousness, and then also King of Salem, meaning King of Peace. So Melchizedek was both king and priest. He was typical of the Son of God, Jesus being a king and priest. And the author of Hebrews makes this point. Melchizedek blessed Abraham, and Jesus blesses all who follow him. So that's a bit of the background of chapter 14. So when we look at Abraham, the man of faith, what do we learn about him? One of the first things we learn is that he's a man of sympathy. In verses 13 and 14, they came and told Abraham that his brother was taken captive. Think of what Abraham could have said. He could have said, he's got himself to blame. He shouldn't have gone to Sodom. Serves him right. He shouldn't have gone there. He could have said, that's the just wages of worldliness. He got involved with those people, what do you expect? But Abraham didn't say any of that. He at once readies himself to seek his deliverance. He had sympathy. He had sympathy for his nephew. And when we call ourselves Christians and walk in fellowship with God, we cannot remain indifferent to the sufferings and sorrows of brethren. Someone's in trouble, what do? Do we turn our back? Do we say, serves them right? We should feel sympathetic and help them. Help them. So we see that he was a man of sympathy. We see that he was a man of courage in verses 14 and 15. Now when Abram heard his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house. With this group of servants, he goes forth against four kings. The man of faith attempts great things. Again, Abraham is not a soldier. He's not a military man. He knows that God can use weak things to confound the mighty. Why was Abraham not afraid to go against these kings to rescue his nephew? Because he knew of the power of God. He knew he had already been blessed so much by God when he left his homeland. When God said, Abraham, I want you to come and I want you to go to a place. And Abraham didn't know where he was going, but he put his faith and trust in God, and God blessed him. Abraham's faith worked by love. He loved his nephew Lot and dared to do this great deed. Great faith constrains us to attempt what seems impossible. Think of Nehemiah, of Moses, of Paul. When we have faith in God and we couple that with love for God and for each other, we are going to attempt great things. It is going to give us courage. Courage. Again, when we get to the book of Joshua, in the first chapter to Joshua, about six times he says, be strong and of good courage. We are to be courageous people. We have God watching over us. So he was a man of sympathy, a man of courage. He was a man of power. He brought back all in verse 16. What was all? He brought back all the goods. He brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the woman and all the people. He brought back everything. He didn't leave any loose ends. This man, Abraham, he had great faith. He was also a man of independence. I will not take anything that is thine. When the king of Sodom offered him something, Abraham said, no, I'm not going to take it. Notice, though, Abraham took all he could get from the king of Salem. And why did he do that? Because he was priest of the Most High God. But he would take nothing from the king of Sodom, lest he should say, I have made Abraham rich. Just think if Abraham had taken whatever the king of Sodom offered him, then down the road, the king of Sodom could point back to Abraham and said, see what he's got? I made him that way. I had a part in that. He would take nothing likely to hinder him from having all the honor. So this is not independence of pride and self-sufficiency, but that of a holy jealousy for the name and character of God. And we need to have our hearts stirred toward this attitude also. The Lord is the portion of his people, Deuteronomy 32:9. I will not take anything that is thine. God, when we follow God, he is going to bless us. Well, we see that Abraham, not only was he a man of sympathy, a man of courage, a man of power, a man of independence, he was a man approved of God. How do we know that? And again, it's just here in the beginning of his faith. Melchizedek met him and blessed him. What does that show? That shows that he was approved of God. He also refreshed him with bread and wine. Jesus Christ, the priest of the Most High God, will so bless and refresh all who, like Abraham, go forth in his name to walk, to work, and to war. Wherever we go, we need to take God with us. What a privilege to meet the blessing priest when returning faint and weary from the struggle of faith. Again, this may not be the best term, but Melchizedek makes this cameo appearance on the scene of history. And we see how Abraham has been blessed and the faith that he has. Many a battle the man of God will need to fight on behalf of others. Jesus, the King of Peace, will meet us and help us. And blessing at last with his well done. Well done. That's what we want to hear from Christ when our life is over here. I want us to look at what the Hebrew writers has to say about Abraham. Hebrews 11, beginning at verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abraham waited for him. We need to wait for the Lord. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky, in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. You stop and think about this. This old man and woman, this old woman past childbearing age, as good as dead. Yet through faith in God and God's promise, their seed becomes innumerable as the stars in the sky. These all died in faith, not having received promises. Verse 13, but having seen afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Does that sound familiar? We talked about that this morning in John 14. Jesus said, I go and prepare a place for you. He has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, which he also received him in a figurative sense. You think about this, when Abraham, God said that he was going to give him a son, and he blesses Abraham with a son, and then God says, Abraham, I want you to go and offer your son up as a sacrifice. That took great faith. But the Hebrew writer gives us some insight into Abraham, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead. We see that faith that Abraham had in the power of God. And Abraham knew that God could raise someone from the dead because he's all powerful. And again, that foreshadows the power that God had to raise up Christ. And all of this should give us faith. It should give us faith. The faith of Abraham, a man of great faith. That's what we want to be. Our faith may be weak. We need to work on it. We need to get in God's word. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God, so that our faith will grow, it will mature. And we read from Hebrews, without faith it is impossible to please God. Friends, if there's anyone here this evening that needs to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.